So the samskara means, samskara means impression. So then the whole idea is that someone acts, means someone's value system is based on their impressions. Whatever is good impression, then that becomes important to them. And whatever is a bad impression, then they try to avoid. You know, so many times you see someone has, you know, a particular fear or an activity they won't do. That's a very simple thing that anyone else would do, and it's nothing to do. It's a very simple thing to do, but they just won't do it because of some scar, some impression in the mind. You know, like let's say someone has to come down a little slope. You know, it's maybe 4 foot high and come down. It's a little steep, but if you just come down nicely and quick, then there's no problem. The person won't come down. Anyone else will come down. You know, be a little careful, come slow, they won't come down. Why they won't come down? You know, it means because you say, no, don't worry, we're here, if you have anything happen, we'll catch you. Okay? But still they won't come down. Because the samskara that they had before is the same situation was there when they were younger, they came down, and the person that said they would catch him if anything happened didn't catch him, and they broke their arm. So that's the samskara. So that impression is in the mind is this is dangerous, you can get hurt, and even if someone says they'll save you from it, they won't. But they can't. So then, therefore, then they don't trust in those situations, they're afraid of these things, and you understand? So it creates that whole thing. So the idea is that the Vedic civilization is the one who wants to create the most positive samskaras. So that is the importance of the whole system, is that it's for creating an experience that then people will like and then accept. Because it's not what your intellect accepts, it's what your mind accepts. What your mind accepts is everything else comes. Right? So that's the whole point, because the mind is in the mode of goodness. It's created from goodness, intelligence from passion, and ego from ignorance. Right? So the ego is manifest through the five, the Mahabhutas, the five elements. The intellect is manifest in the senses. But the mind stands on its own. And from there, everything works. So depending upon the mind, everything moves. Like that. Even if it's the ego, the identity, but that's the general field. But what the mind accepts as a goal, that's what you endeavor for. Because ego is only your platform of existence. Right? The intelligence is your methods. You know how you're mechanically going to get it, because it's the senses. You know how to use the ten senses. But the mind is the one that creates the goal, the prayojana. Does that make sense? So ego creates the sambandha, the intelligence is the avideya, but the mind is the prayojana. So it's whatever the mind says, that's what happens. That's why you have to control the mind with the intelligence. And that's got to be based on identity, the sambandha that I am Krishna's devotee, rather than I'm of this material world. Does that make some sense? So that's the principle. So you're trying to get back to that. So whatever experiences the mind has, that's what you take as valuable. Otherwise, you don't. You know, if the mind doesn't value it, then unless there's trust that through, you know, the intelligence or by the push of, because you're attached to certain aspects of identity, you might be able to get them through. Like let's say someone, you have a Kshatriya and he's afraid of a situation, so therefore then you call upon his identity as a, you know, virtuous person or a chivalrous person, or, you know, in this way a good ruler or something. That then it will invoke them, it will bring the mind to the point of accepting the activity even though they may not want to. Like that. So it always, the mind is the point you're trying to catch. You catch the mind, then your work is done. So if the mind has accepted that I am servant of Krishna, that's the value. So whatever is going to be pleasing to Krishna is what we want to endeavor for. Because the mind is accepting and rejecting. So if it's made the principle that I will only accept things if they're connected to Krishna, and anything that's not connected to Krishna, I'll reject the Krishna consciousness. But if it accepts something that's not, and rejects something that is, then one hasn't attained the proper platform yet. So everything is trying to get at the mind. So that's why samskara then is so important. Because for the child, they're just basically experiencing. They're not using their intellect to actually apply themselves. So that's why in the younger years, when the intelligence, all that, is not working for a value system other than anamoy, right? Then these samskaras are done for them, so it creates impression, it creates purity through which they can gain good impressions. You know, it purifies the body, it purifies the intelligence, the senses. You know, it connects with everything and makes that purity. Then it's much easier to make the proper decision, right? Because that's the whole point. Mind accepts and rejects, so it's a matter of decision making. So if mind tends towards purity, it will accept pure things. And if it tends towards impurity, it will accept impure things. Because whatever you've done is what you're going to do again. So if you're working in the field of purity, then the desire for purity arises again. But if you work in the field of sin, then the desire to perform those sins again come up. Does that make sense? That's just how the karma works. So the mind then becomes the central feature here. So then the parents wanting to create that good atmosphere for the children, you know, they always want the best. Therefore the samskaras are performed. Does that make some sense? So now, of the samskaras, then you start. Gavardhan is, you have 10 main samskaras. But within it, there's smaller divisions of samskaras that are connected with those 10. So I think you have up to 48. Like that. Then the Gopabhata Goswami, I'm not sure exactly how many he deals with. But within the 10, is Antyeshti, and that's never put in a book where the other samskaras are. It begins with marriage, and it goes, there's marriage and Garbhodan, and it goes up to the point where there would be marriage again. So it works within that sphere. Antyeshti is in another, like that. Even sannyas is put in another. So then, if you count those, then the sannyas and the Antyeshti, then that leaves you with 8. So if there's 16 there, those are all the 8 plus supplementary ones. So then the first, which is the major one, is Garbhodan. So there the point is that the child is going to have an inherent nature by their previous activities. So now the parents actually have a choice to attract a more or less purified soul, because so many souls are there that have a similar nature that will match. So then, which one will be the one that's attractive? Then that's the one that is then brought out. Because otherwise you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of living entities in conception. But now, which one makes it there? That depends on the consciousness. The consciousness is based on purity. That's your samskara. So in Garbhodan, when Garbhodan samskara is there, then you get a pure soul like that. So if the parents are focused on what kind of nature they want, and you know everything's done according to the proper time, the purity, you know, proper consciousness, and all that, then you get the, you know, as purified and as, you know, similar as soul as possible. So that's the purpose of that, is that the person has already been basically imbued, their overall nature is purity. Things done according to religious principles, in the proper way, proper time, with proper, you know, arrangements and people and association and all that. It's just, that's the basis of their existence, because that's how they were called into, you know, how they were called into the body is through that medium. So that means that's going to be their gross and subtle body will have that nature. Does that make sense? So it's a science. It's not a matter of, some people think it's that the Garbhodan just makes it, it's just an auspicious rite to create fertility or something like that. You know, just that will work. You'll conceive. No, it's not that. That's just my mechanical, you know, nature of the couple. So sometimes devotees think, you know, well, I didn't do Garbhadhana and I had kids, mm-hmm. you know, but it's not like that. You can have kids, dogs have kids, they don't do samsara, you know, so that's not the big deal, mm-hmm. you know. It's like that. If there's fertility and potency, then you'll have conception. So that's that side of it. That's a medical point. But here it's a matter of who you want to call, you know. That's the point, is that, you know, it's just like you said. Okay, you know, you have a room full of devotees, and you know, who would like to do this service, right? Then, and it's only one person can do that service, then, you know, the person, how you present it is basically the one you're going to attract. You know, it says, yeah, we got some pots here, you know, and all that. Anyone want to watch some pots? You know, then you get some, well, I guess I could do, yeah, it's service to Krishna, I guess, and it's done. You go, wow, we have this great service here, you know, the mercy is flowing. You know, you go on and hold, you know, the way they do it, you know, the Sankirtan hold. Then you go, yeah, yeah, I want to do the pots, huh? Yeah, there, Lord Chaitanya's pots, you know, you know, understand? So that's the whole point, is Garbhadhana will attract the soul according to the consciousness and arrangements that the parents have made. Right? So that's the basis of their particular condition of existence. Because they're all there. It's just a matter of which one you're gonna get. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It means the general principle, because it means the father has a general nature. It'll be within that, but it may be his better side or his worst side. You know, the mother, the field's the field. You know, like that. You only have one field. It's just like you have a field. You can put whatever seed you want into it, and you're going to get that particular plant you'll get out. But there's only one field, right? So the wife is one field. So for her, it's the quality of the field. But the particular living entity then depends upon the consciousness. Is that there?
Mm-hmm.
So the general nature will be there from the father, the field will be there from the mother, but now the combined consciousness is what's going to determine which soul it is. Right? Then after that, then the next one, which is only done with the first child, from what I know. Some say it's only for the first child, some say it's until you get a son. So the second samskar is then for ensuring that the child's a boy. Because in the Vedic tradition, you know, according to Karmakanda, is that you can only go to the heavenly planets if you have a son to carry on the Shraddha rites. Like, if you're not doing Shraddha rites, you don't go to the heavenly planets. You want to go to Maharjanatapa. Satya, that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to go to heaven, you know, Indra's place and those places to enjoy your senses, you know, Pipiloka, then you can only do that if you have a son that's going to perform the Shraddha rites. And if he doesn't perform the rites, then you fall from there. Because you don't get your food, you don't get your facilities. Okay. So then, son's important. So that's why if one wants him, that's not the same. It's good, the first one's a son, then he'll take care of the mother, and, you know, all these different things that makes life easier. Otherwise, for devotees, it doesn't really matter. So that's there for ensuring that. Because the first month is not determined whether it's male or female. They both develop the same for the first month. And then after that, then it's good. So that's why that samskara is done at that time, because then the determining factor is like that. Then the next one is for the male, the consciousness. So when the child becomes conscious in the seventh month, then the samskara is done, so that the consciousness will be purified. And then there's a samskara for that the birth will be taught. Because then, according to karma, the mother is, you know, and the child are either going to have a better or worse experience, you know, by their previous karma. So then that samskara is there to, you know, remove any taints that may be there that would cause a difficult situation. Okay. Then the birth ceremony, then that's for creating intelligence. It's called, also known as Medha Yajna. Jati karma is also known as Medha Yajna. Is to create intelligence. You've already done the consciousness for the one in the seventh month. Then I think that's Pumasavana, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's the Shoshayati, that's for the birth. But I know, I can't remember. Okay, and then?
Very good health, at least.
But it comes at the time when there is, oh, the Simanta Nayana. Yeah. That's the one. Okay, that's the one for that. Yeah. From Savana.
Starting of the one.
Yeah, and then there's the one after Simanta Nayana.
Yeah.
Shoshayati, yeah. So that one's for sake. So that's a minor one. Mm-hmm. You know? These are all part of Garbhadan, and Bhagavadan includes these other three. So you see, is your consciousness is there, you know? And then Medha Yajna is the intelligence. Because then they get the intelligence for, because without intelligence means what kind of intelligence that's what we're going to endeavor for, because that's the senses. The intelligence has the senses. So then if the intelligence is pure intelligence, then that means the senses will be applied in a pure way. Otherwise the tendency will be towards impurity. Then you have the Namakarana, means that the child, his results of his activities are there from previous, you know, activities, previous life. So that means that's, and those are delivered by the three modes of nature. The three modes of nature deliver those through the nine planets. The nine planets are in charge of delivering your results. Like that, creating the situation, creating the people that are involved, the result you get, the methods that will be gotten. So they're in control of all that. So then that will go nicely, then Namakarma is there. Because the Lord's potencies are coming down through them. So in other words, your situation should be proper. So that's why then the name is then based off the nakshatra, a syllable of the nakshatra. There's other ways to do it, but it's all connected with the planets. So it's generally either the zodiac sign or the nakshatra. And that will then set the syllable, but then you choose a name. So then after that is anaprasa. So that is for digestion, that the health will be good. If the health is good, then everything else is proper. If your digestion works properly, your appetite is there, then you'll eat and you can digest. Mm-hmm. Right? So if that works properly, then you'll be healthy. All diseases start in the stomach from indigestion. If it doesn't digest properly in one way, you get this disease, and another way you get that disease. You know, it's just like it's just chemical reaction. Does that make some sense? Mm-hmm. So that the point is that if how you don't digest, that means it will create these particular kinds of impurities. And then those, when they go into the body, mm-hmm. through the bloodstream, then that will create those diseases. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's why stomach is the source. Plus the undigested, you know, food, then that toxins go in, and wherever it's weak in the body, it'll settle there. So even though, let's say, you have a part of your body is weak, it doesn't mean it has to get a disease. It's susceptible to disease, but you don't have to get it if the digestion is good, because then there'll be no toxins in the body for it to create a disease. Right? Unless the toxin is there, how you get the disease? So then if the toxin is there, then it will go move around the body, and wherever is a weak part of the body, those can't get rid of the toxins, so they'll just accumulate there and will create that particular disease. Does that make sense? So that's why the digestion is, that anaprasana is very important for the health. Then after that, then they have the shaving. So that's also then for the physical purity. Because when the child's born, they're born with some hair, and so that's impure, because it's there from the womb. Mm-hmm. So then that's shaved at that time. But it's not done, you know, the earliest is done is 1 year. Because otherwise the bones in the head haven't, haven't formed fully. Because whenever you shave the head, there's a slight dryness in the scalp. Yeah. So it will create some pull, you know, for a short time until the skin again creates enough oil to soften. But that pull then, until the skull is completely formed, it's not done. So in the first year it can be done, so that or the third year. So depending.
doesn't really matter. I think that's what it says, right? First to third, or is it third and fifth? Or first, third, and fifth?
Fifth. First and second year? And third? Second up is the fifth year. And fifth year is the third up.
So first, third, or fifth?
Yeah.
So before that, it's not done. A lot of people like to do it with anaprasana, but it actually is too early. Like that. You see, I've seen something like in North, many of them, they do it at that time. They like to do it all at that time. It actually should be done in the year. So then that creates that purity. You know, so it's, in other words, it's also a determination for pure life. You know, like that. Because the samskaras are repeated again. They will be repeated again for the student, the boy in the Gurukul, generally at the age of 16 when they become adult. Then there's a second shaving, because that's when the beard comes. Because then they're adult, now they're in the Gurukul and following a Vedic, you know, lifestyle, because their parents put them there. Mm-hmm. But now at 16 they're adult, and so when they make that determination, I'm doing this because I want to do it, that's the true karma, the second one. Because then they're shaved, and then it's like, I don't know, they're going to continue. But if they're graduating at that point, then there's no need. It's only for the determination I'm going to continue studying, like that. So it's more in connection with that. But it also has that aspect of that determination. Because in the Vedic, then many times they would graduate because they're adults, so then the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas would generally graduate at that time. But the Brahmins, they could either graduate at that time or not. Like you see, Lord Chaitanya was married at 16. So they could, like that. Because by 16, you should have studied one day then. You know, you should have finished, like that. It's ideal they stay till more. 24 is considered more of an ideal age. And then 30, I think, is the next one. 30 or 32. Like that, because then you know three Vedas. So minimum is one Veda, you know, then two, and then three. Three is considered the optimum. But Prabhupada has fixed the 24 as better. Because then the idea being is then the son would be grown up by the time the husband is 50, the father is 50. So then the son, then he would be married, and then he would take up, you know, and he would take care of the mother. So then the father's free to go to the forest. You know, so that's the ideal. So Prabhupada's picked that. That's also when the body's most mature and fit. You know, so there's the best, what do you call it? For getting a son, that's considered better. The body's fully developed. So that's nice. So Prabhupada mentioned. So then after that, then there is... No, that's later. That's still we have the next is the beginning to learn to letters and numbers and all that. What's that called? It should be in there. But it's, look in the appendix. Look in the table of contents of the appendices. Is there, I think there's some additional details. Because there's more side, because this is a subdivision of Upanayana. Mm. Appendices. Yes. Yeah, but then there's no appendix. So it's got Deepika. Oh, here we go. Penetrating the common rights. Continuous disciplining. Like you're really. That's fine. I would have thought that they would have been Vidyaramba. Yeah, Vidyaramba, Karnaveda. These are all extra. Sambartana. Oh, this is just telling when the times are. Vidyaramba. These are just the auspicious times. Mm-hmm. the Vidyarambha, is then starting to learn. So that means the intelligence is purified and the senses are connected to the intelligence. Because you create an intelligence, but now is the point where the two are connected. And it's just like many times you can hum in your head or you can think of a musical tune, and in your head it's perfect. But if you try to bring it out your mouth, it's out of tune, out of everything, and you just can't get it right. Because you have to be able to connect the two. So then the intelligence and the senses that are connected with the Vidyarambha, you know, for the purpose of elevation and knowledge. So in other words, your activities are based on knowledge. That makes sense. So in the Upanayanam, then that is for the purpose that bringing near to the teacher, that now you take up actual human life. Means this is second birth. Because first birth is from the parents. Right? Because parents have mutual attraction, so the child is born. If they don't have attraction, there won't be any children. So that's the basis of that. So that's, and when they're born, then they don't know. They haven't made decisions, so they're considered that they're animal birth. Now, they're human animals, but they still have to be turned, into actual sentient beings, where they're trying to, their consciousness is focused on attaining the Supreme. So Upanayanam then is for that, where they start to learn and practice the culture and everything to make it their own values. So they'll grow up to become a member, a proper member of the community. So that means then they have the right to study the Veda and that, and then their duties are established. Because if they don't, before that, they're technically just unmarried grihasthas. Right? But they don't have any responsibility. They enjoy the facilities of the grihastha ashram, but they don't have any responsibility. But Upanayanam means that then they have responsibility for knowledge, to serve the teacher and learn from the teacher by that respect and direction so that they come to the proper platform. Does that make some sense? Yeah, so that's the opportunity is to render that service. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So then, yeah, that's what they're for. Then we mentioned now the Chudakarna is now when they make that full determination themselves. Of course, they have to be inclined towards it and Upanayanam. If they're against it and all that, then, that's there. So the Dvijas, they take Upanayanam, right? And they go to Gurukul like that. At least beyond the basic, ABCD kind of level. Like that. Otherwise, Prabhupada is any devotee could go to the Gurukul. But then he also mentioned that at 10, then that's where you split them. Those who want to do more academics, they would go there, and those who don't go into trades. Like that. So that would be the automatic thing, is that at 10, then you split. Then you're trained according to your nature. Like that. Before that, of course, as devotees, the Brahminical culture is there, because that's common amongst Vaishnavas. But not so much the occupation. I mean, someone may be they're a Shudra by occupation, but a Brahmin by their determination, their culture, and their realization. So all devotees, if they're practicing nicely with the proper consciousness, are Brahmins. It means they'll act like one. It means there are anyway, but they may be bad Brahmins by having too much material desire and qualities. So they're Brahmins, so it might as well that the nature fits, the culture fits, it should fit. Otherwise, it's a problem. So then, So then, beyond that, then it's for specifically for training them. In what is the mood and nature of their varna? Because ashram is the same, so you have to have the same good qualities, good behavior. It doesn't matter, I think we were discussing about any, if you go to any, basically if they're still have any value of, they're kind of like Indian culture. You go to any house in India, from any strata, from any community, and how they will serve, the mood of serving prasad will be the same. Right? Even if they're living, in a busty on the side of the road, the still the mood of serving and that is the same. That's it. What they'll eat, the order they eat it in, what it goes with, that's community and wealth and all these different kinds of things. But the mood is the same. You know? So in the same way is that the culture, the Vaishnav, the Brahminical culture is common for all devotees. Everybody follows that. But how they're going to maintain themselves, what is their occupation, that is determined, that's fine. Does that make some sense? That's the point. It has nothing to do with their devotional acumen and this and that. Many times, because of the nature of the occupation, that may be more or less favorable, you know, in Krishna consciousness. You know, it just makes it quicker, slower, because Brahminical is supposed to be more a mode of goodness. But if it's Brahminical, depending on their field, if they take a lower field, it's not, you know, studying, teaching the scriptures, like that kind of thing. Then if they're, you know, into economics or into medicine or into these, that, then, you know, it's a touch lower than that. It'll carry that flavor, you know. It'll carry that. Just like a doctor, you know, their worry is always going to be about the body, but sometimes the subtle body. So when they see someone in that, that's the position they'll relate on. Well, if it's hearing, I mean, it's studying and teaching the scriptures, then it's going to be based more on the knowledge of the soul and God and like that. Though, from the platform of Ayurveda, its only purpose is to get you to that level. So it is fully connected. So a doctor who knows the science well, both the, you know, the subtleties and the gross, then there's no difference between him and the person who's teaching the scriptures. They're just like Murari Gupta. He would cure his patients both materially and spiritually. But that was pointed out because that's what a doctor is supposed to do, but it's not necessarily that they all do it. So because he was doing it, that's special. You know, just like Yudhishthira, the qualities he has, that's what a king should be like, but the ideal is very rarely attained. But unless you have that as a goal, then you won't get anything. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, like if you make it determined, okay, today it's a special day, I'm going to chant 108 rounds today. You know? That you set it 108, maybe you'll get 108, but you know, you may get 64, you may get 80, but you'll do more than 16. But if you only set it at 16, then you get 16 done, or you got so busy because it's a festival and you did less. So whatever you put it at, then it gets that or less. Sometimes you get more, but I'm just, the general principle is that. So if you set your ideals high and then practically go apply it, then according to your nature and your ability and your and the facility, then you will get as close to that ideal as possible. If you have no ideal, then there's nothing to focus. So then how will the results of your activities come to you? Because that's how karma works, is that you'll get the result, but if you're focused on it and all that, you'll get it quicker. And if you're not, it'll come anyway. But it'll take time, you'll get a little bit here, there, and all over the place. You'll get it. Because your karma comes through the medium of other living entities and through the medium of action. So if you have focused action, means your karma can come through that. But it's not because you did the activity, it's just coming through that. You know? I mean, it's just like you have a door and something comes through the door, but you didn't do something that it came through that door, you know, like that. So then, does that make any sense? It means you work today, you get a result, but the result hasn't come from your work today, it's come from your work from the previous. But it looks like it because it goes together, it's done like that it looks like it. So people will think it's my activity today, I did the work, I got the result is mine. But actually, it's no, you've done the work, you'll get a result for that. If you claim it, you'll get it, you know, but in the future. Mm-hmm. This result is already there from before. You work, don't work, you're going to get it. But you work, it comes quicker and more focused. Mm-hmm. Does that make some sense? Okay. Then, when the person has finished their studies, you know, and their vow, then the sambartana, graduation. Because you decide, I'm going to study this much in this much time. So that means there's three kinds of graduates. Someone who has finished both, or someone else who has finished one or the other of them. It means he was going to learn this much knowledge, he learned it, but quicker than his vow. He said, I'm going to do this for 10 years, but he learned it in 8. Mm-hmm. So 2 years early he graduates. So his knowledge is completed, but not his vow. And then the other is that he completed, he said, in 10 years I'm going to learn this much, and he stayed for 10 years, but he didn't learn at all. Mm-hmm. So he completed his vow, but not his determination of study. But all of those three are considered because they've completed something. The best is he's done both, and the other is he's completed. Mm-hmm. Like that. Worst is they don't complete their vow or their knowledge. So that's generally, they're not even counted as a graduate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they haven't gained something. Like that. So then the graduate means you only graduate if you're going to get married. So that's the difference between the Naistika and the Upakorvana, is the Upakorvana graduates, the Naistika never graduates. So the Upakorvana graduates, he's known as a Snataka. Right? So then he's an upstanding member of the community, where he actually is community. You know what I'm saying? Well, the Naistika Brahmacharya isn't so much, they're on the edge of the community, but they're not really the community. You know, it's like you don't invite them, when you're doing a Brahmin feeding, you generally don't invite the Brahmacharis, you know, like that, Shraddha Rite, these things. That's for Grihasthas. Like that, because Brahmacharis maintain themselves by begging, you know, not by being invited. That's for Grihasthas. So then they graduate. So the purpose is that he has his knowledge, right? So he knows what is the material world, what is relationship, his position within it, how to interact. He knows all the things. He has the knowledge, but he hasn't come to the point of realization that there is no importance to material endeavor and gain. So he still has the sentiment for it. So he has the knowledge that it's not important, but his sentiment is still in favor of it. Or, you know, open to it. You know, favorably disposed. Maybe not rabidly going for it, but the desire is there, so if the opportunity comes. Therefore, the Upakorvana is if the opportunity means he'll inherit money, he'll have facility, you know, a girl is there, all these different things. Means because unless he has something, then naturally, then how is he going to take care of the girl? Mm-hmm. Like his girls need facility. They can live in an austere environment as long as the emotional level is very high. So that's the thing, because the Brahmins know the culture and all that. Therefore, the experience is very strong. And so the girls then can function in a greatly reduced environment. Still, the girl requires more than the boy requires. That's what's there. So even a very simple Brahmin, his wife, a Brahmani, she'll be more complicated than him. Though she may be more, need less facility and all that than, let's say, a Kshatriya man. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But she's still, whatever the match is, the girl is always more than the boy. Because it's just the feminine nature, it's the way it is. So if all that it lines up, then he'll graduate. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then what's the purpose? If you can't run a grihastha life, there's no inclination, that's not even a question. Even if he may be inclined, but there's going to be no facility, then why endeavor? It won't work out anyway. So therefore, you know, it's just the Lord's indication that one should remain Naistika. So he just continues like that. In the future, if it ever opportunity comes up, then he may graduate. You can graduate at any time. Mm-hmm. You know, you have that one, I forget what his name is, a story about one, famous story about one brahmachari, that he was just in the ashram, and one day he was, you know, went to the forest, picked up wood, and, you know, and when he brought it to the ashram, and, you know, he was carrying it, I guess, on his shoulder, whatever it is, when he dropped it, placed it on the ground, it pulled out one of his hairs, and he noticed the hair was white. So he understood he was getting old. Because before that, he was so absorbed in serving the guru that he didn't even think about it. So then he thought, oh, because he still had desire for the whole family life and that, so he graduated at that time. Mm-hmm. Okay. I forget who that is, but it's one of the famous stories. So like that. There's a normal time, Prabhupada recommends 24, 25. And 24 is there, so it went 25th. Then he graduates at that time. Because then, he's mature enough, he knows enough, he'll be able to function in society. So then he graduates. So snataka means when he's bathed. So part of the ceremony is the water is sprinkled on him. It's approximate. So then he is considered bathed. So then he's respected. As now, he's a member of the community, right? An active member. He works within the big, the big school. All the brahmacharis, they move on in their own sphere. It's a replica, but it's small. They move around the edges, as do the vanaprastha sannyasis. But the grihastha is the embodiment of it. Then is marriage, and that is then, the point is then you start the whole process again. Yeah, so then marriage, then boy and girl get married, so then the whole thing starts. So the marriage is so that they may be Krishna conscious in there. They may engage all the material needs in the Lord's service through proper religious methods. In this also then, all that means the samskars are done for the girls up to the upanayanam. Upanayanam's not. But marriage, then all the benefits of the upanayanam are gained through marriage. Like that. So, and also, any finer details of the samskars that are before that, then they're all brought out more specifically in the marriage ceremony. Mm-hmm. So in the marriage ceremony, you'll see as the boy learns from a proper consciousness and how to deal with a woman, what is the nature of the woman, and what's his relationship. But for the woman, that's her main pure, of samskar is that. So then she's purified of all the things, difficulties with children, or with wealth, or relationships, or all these different things. They're all purified of that kind of health. So then that's that circle.
But for example, they say some new couples, they want to get married. Before we explain to them, how can we explain to them about wedding? What is the importance of wedding, getting married? What is marriage?
Marriage away is authorizing legally the connection between a man and a woman for the purpose of, conjugal union. Because if they're not married, then the children they get will be substandard, because it's the rite of ghost to enter the womb of an unmarried girl. If there's any conception while she's unmarried, then it is somebody who got stuck in a ghost body. That's how they can get, one of the ways they can get freed from that, is whenever there's illicit activity, then they enter that womb. So that, generally someone who's in a ghost form, there's some unfortunate situation with their consciousness and all that. So then that's created either by themselves, committing suicide. So that means there's too much ignorance is there. Mm-hmm. The ego is too great, but their ability is too small. So then they're frustrated. So there's a lot of attachment and a lot of anger. And then that comes back on themselves. So it's very self-centered. Therefore, these things happen. Or, intoxicated when they died. So that shows that the character is not so developed. Or by some great calamitous death. So that shows also very heavy karma. So in other words, you're dealing with, the modes of ignorance. Something's wrong. So then those souls are freed from the ghost body in those situations. So one would naturally want to avoid, let other people free them. They don't have there's enough people out there. So that's the importance of marriage rights. Now, of marriage rights, then you have eight kinds. So of the eight, four are considered, you know, they'll get better quality purified souls, and four will be less, because four are based on, you know, how you say, more on like authority and this kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It's not so much on desire, while the other four are more based on desire. Mm-hmm. Unless this desire is so great. So that means naturally that the children are attracted to the baby, but less also. You know, in other words, the four that are considered auspicious means the girl is given away by the father. So with the father's approval, then she's being given to a boy that's suitable. Mm-hmm. So in two of them, then the father has chosen the boy. Mm-hmm. You know, one is by his endeavor to look. Mm-hmm. The second is by chance. He's pious. He's doing yajnas, so therefore then the boy is one of the priests. Being impressed that he gives his daughter. Mm-hmm. As, you know, basically part of the dakshi. Mm-hmm. You know, then the third is where the girl herself, as the father can arrange, then with his authorization, she chooses, mm-hmm. you know, a husband. And the fourth is that the boy's side approaches the girl's side of the family and requests. It means they found the girl, rather than the girl found the boy. That. But all of them, the common element is that the father's approval and the father giving away the girl. Mm-hmm. While the other four, then it's doesn't, there may or may not be approval. Mm-hmm. Or there may be approval. Or there may be approval, but the transactions are considered low grade. Right? Mm-hmm. Asura means is that the boy pays money to, you know, the father and mother, the girl and the girl herself, and then being pleased that he's given enough money, then the girl's married to him. But that's business, that's selling the daughter. So that's considered. By mana, it shouldn't even be used. It's a way to become married, but it's rejected as actually a approved method. Mm-hmm. You know. Then Rakshasa. Yeah, and then Paisach is also rejected. It means where the boy seduces the girl when she's, you know, either asleep or inebriated or disoriented. In other words, she doesn't know what's going on, and he comes and takes her. So then that's, she's not really conscious. So that's the method of ghosts. Mm-hmm. So that's not approved. That's to be rejected also. Mm-hmm. Then the Rakshasa rite means where the girl's kidnapped. So it doesn't necessarily, you may or may not have approval of the parents. Mm-hmm. You know, but that method is only for Kshatriyas, and it can only be used in the first three yugas. In Kali Yuga, even that's the case. And Gandharva means just mutual attraction. The boy and girl agree to be married, and so just that they're accepting each other on a lifelong basis, that acceptance then is marriage. But it has nothing to do with any other ranges. So lust is the basis. So that's why it may give a less quality child, mm-hmm. like that. So that also is approved for the Kshatriyas, but only in the first three yugas. Mm-hmm. Right. And so in this age, then those others are not approved.
Mm-hmm. So when you say boy and girl mutual attraction, but if the boy and girl mutual attraction has been, boy and girl has spoken first, and if the parents have agreed with that.
So it can be a combination.
The combination is okay.
Yeah, it just means it's a combined Gandharva and whatever is there. It means it depends upon there. It means that then for looks at it, did the boy approach the girl, the girl approach the boy. So that makes a difference whether it's Arsha or Prajapatya. Mm-hmm. You know, the girl chose is Prajapatya, the boy chose is Arsha. You know, like that. Mm-hmm. So then it's a matter, if the girl chose it, she'll go to her father and say, can I marry this boy? Mm-hmm. And if the boy comes to the father and says, can I marry your daughter? Then that's Arsha. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're all approved of marriages. Like that. Because you see that, even the Kshatriyas, when they use these others, they combine. Mm-hmm. The girl is stolen, and then after that, when everything, the dust settles, they go back, and then, you know, they have a nice wedding ceremony. Mm-hmm. like that, or even if there's Gandharva rite, then generally after there's a wedding ceremony. But sometimes it's not. Because if the Gandharva rite ends in their mutual consent and in conception, then, you know, there's no need. It's done. So, for the quality of children, therefore, it's important. And it also, because it's a formalized ceremony, then generally there would be more commitment. You know. So, because samskara is supposed to create focus. So then if it's focus on the marriage, then it will happen. If it's not focused, then it will not happen. Is that okay?